We like to do things by the numbers. We're all about commerce and community. Welcome to The Upswing, presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now for the host that's always on The Upswing, Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. Housing and happiness. That's what's on the docket for today. Mike Ruzicka, the Greater Milwaukee Association of Realtors, and Katie Rinka from Keller Williams will join us next segment to discuss all the changes in real estate commissions that are happening that just went into place on Saturday. And then we'll talk happiness, the World Happiness Report. In the second half of the show, Natalie Eilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel joins to discuss the correlation between money, happiness, and career. Fascinating study was front page Journal Sentinel story on Sunday. But as always, two up, let's go. Two big stories that I'm seeing. Hey, baby, what's your number? I mean, your credit score. Number. Yes, credit scores, this according to the Wall Street Journal, have made their way into dating apps. For some people, it speaks volumes about whether a prospect will be a reliable partner. Now, just full disclosure here, I'm not dating. Let's make that clear. But a survey by personal finance company Credit Karma found that two-thirds of Americans said it's really important that their partner has a good credit score. And that's making its way into all these national dating apps, people asking one another what their credit score is. I found that pretty interesting. But the states, incidentally, with the highest credit scores are Minnesota, Vermont, Wisconsin, good job, Wisconsin, New Hampshire, and Washington. Notably, the leading states are primarily located in the northern half of the United States, Washington representing, obviously, the Pacific Northwest region. So Minnesota stands out as the sole state with credit ratings categorized as very good, falling in the range of 740 to 799. Second big story, Wisconsin business leaders say that AI will not displace workers. This according to a new report from the TechEd Media Group titled The State of Artificial Intelligence in Wisconsin. I was at an event last week where this report was debuted, and Milwaukee Business Journal's Rich Kirchen is out with a story yesterday on this new report that surveyed 53 area business leaders, produced again by the TechEd Media Group in Mequon, led by former manufacturing executive Matt Kirkner. He hosts the Tech Ed podcast, is president of Lab Midwest. The report says, and Matt, this is a quote from Matt, "I think everyone in the survey recognizes that this technology is going to be truly transformative to their organization, whether it's logistics, distribution, manufacturing, healthcare, nonprofit, or education. Now they're trying to figure out what it's going to transform in their organization." The big thing in the surveys they found is that they don't expect the business executives in the state that employee counts will change significantly, but AI will make people more effective, efficient, and improve their quality of life at work. Big changes coming in commissions, in the buying and selling of homes in the state of Wisconsin. We're going to get the scoop in terms of what the realtors are seeing after the first weekend of these changes. Katie Rinka from Keller Williams joins us, and Mike Ruzicka from the Greater Milwaukee Association of Realtors. This is The Upswing. We are presented by Horicon Bank, and you're listening to WTMJ.
Our house in the middle of our streets. Our house in the middle of our
Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Lots of changes coming to the housing and real estate, at least the residential real estate market. But housing, no matter how you cut it, is still really hot. July was another really good month for home sales in the four-county metro Milwaukee area, up 4.8% compared to last July. And this is according to data released by the Greater Milwaukee Association of Realtors. Mike Ruzicka from the Greater Milwaukee Association of Realtors joins us, as does Katie Rinka from Keller Williams. But some changes coming, both Katie and Mike, to maybe how, not necessarily how we buy and pay for our homes, but new rules in terms of how commission is structured and enacted from the buyer and seller side. Typically, the seller of a home pays a commission fee that kind of range from, 5 to 6% based up, depending on the sale price of the home, split between the seller's agent and the buyer's agent. But now, buyer side agents will need to enter into written agreements with their clients. Katie, I'm guessing from your realtor lens, you've been preparing for this for months. But how was the first weekend of open houses in terms of just the conditions out there?
Yeah, so it kind of has and it hasn't, right?
Yeah.
We're lucky to be in the state of Wisconsin. Our documents have been up to par with these current changes for a lot of years. So it hasn't been a big change for us on that. I think the level of education because of the spotlight nationally has really upped. And I think everyone welcomes education. This business is ever changing. I was telling Mike earlier, though, to answer your second question, I had a few showings this weekend and it was as is normal business. So it hasn't directly changed for me dramatically yet, but I think we are becoming as prepared as possible and have been for some time to get ready for any challenges that might come up.
Yeah. And Mike, from what you're seeing with, your association and kind of the aggregate of all realtors, Wisconsin's kind of been a leader in terms of transparency for years, right? I mean, we're pretty transparent in terms of our documentation and what is needed on both the buy and sell side.
Yeah, we're lucky enough to live in a very pro-consumer state that for years, decades really, all the contracts are very transparent. So on line 50 or 51 of the listing contract, it says compensation to others. And that's been there for decades, which is basically what this lawsuit was all about. In other states, we were all kind of shocked when the settlement was reached. And we realized that in states like Florida and Kansas and Missouri, people didn't know what the other side was being compensated, which was shocking to us. So all really what this settlement involves in Wisconsin is a little bit more paperwork on the front end between a realtor and the buyer. The seller, really nothing's changing for them. It's more on the buyer side. And I guess what we're a little bit fearful of now, as you mentioned, and Katie's company's done a great job of educating their agents, prior to the deadline. What we're a little bit worried about is buyers in the future. So the realtors all know what to do now.
Right.
Now, in the next 6 months, when we meet with buyers, how are they going to react to it?
I mean, do you think, and I know we're only a couple days into it, but you're both been in the industry for a long time. Will it create additional confusion, especially, like you said, Mike, for first-time buyers? It kind of means you got to ask a few more questions, right?
I think that's what it is, Jeff. And I think to Mike's point, too, we're all about transparency from the state. And so the more communication you can have with a buyer at that initial buyer meeting or at an open house, the better, right? There's no need to doom and gloom or scare anybody. You have an honest conversation of how commission will be paid, and there are options now. And I think that's all it really comes down to.
Yeah. So if I'm going to open houses next weekend as a potential buyer, and I walk in and I want to write an offer because I love the house, what are my questions supposed to be?
You want to take that one? So open house, one of the changes too, open houses you can walk into without representation.
Okay.
If you would like to write an offer, there are documents that at least I know we have at the ready to say, okay, you are going to work with me and I will help, my team will help write this offer for you. So, it all, again, comes down to communication and preparedness for both the buyer and the agent, for that matter, in that scenario.
Mm-hmm. On the consumer side, it's really important for consumers to realize they don't have a responsibility in this. They don't, if they walk into an open house, it's not like they have to, do something or sign something right away.
All right.
They can do whatever they want.
All right.
It's on the realtor's, it's a realtor's responsibility to explain to them if they want to engage the resources of a realtor.
All right. When we come back, I want to see what you're both seeing locally. Are we still in a hot housing market, higher prices, and what's the state of the state? This is The Upswing. We're presented by Horicon Bank, and you are listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to the Upswing. Milwaukee area real estate professionals have been bracing themselves for key industry changes that went into effect this past weekend on Saturday. Some local agents kind of maybe fearing that first-time home buyers and minorities could be negatively impacted. Just, you know, I'm looking at the WTMJ talking text line right now, 855-616-1620. Seems like buyers, this is from the 414, seems like buyers have to agree to pay thousands more before any work is ever done. That's not the case of the changes that's happening here. So I have realtor Katie Rinka and Mike Rizinka from the Greater Milwaukee Association of Realtors in studio. So how do you think the changes are going to interact with existing inventory? It's really tight in the area right now. Do you see any long-term effects on the local housing market?
Yeah, you're correct. It's definitely, there's a shortage of inventory. We've been in this seller's market now for 2-3 years or more. I think it's going, we have to see what the market does with these changes. I'd love if I had a crystal ball, right? All of us. I think it's going to depend on how the market reacts to this. We still have low inventory. So hopefully we can kickstart something, but we don't know yet.
Yeah, this is not changing supply and demand at all.
Right.
So if buyers are thinking, oh, great, this is going to lower prices. And we've heard that in a few outlets. That is simply not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Prices are set by the market, by what buyers and sellers are willing to offer and pay for a house. And then the commission comes out of that. In the past, it came exclusively out of the seller, from the seller's contribution. Now there's some, you know, could come from both sides. Actually, what's funny about that is we've actually had buyer agency for several decades where people who are interested in having their agent work exclusively for them can sign a buyer agency, and they can still do that, and then they compensate their agent themselves. So overall, as far as the market dynamics go, I don't think it's going to change anything.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that could change that is more inventory, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's going to change it.
Yeah.
What do you see in terms of, I mean, there's always been a lot of competition around commissions. There's always competition in the sales game, no matter what industry you're in. What's your suggestion, Katie, for first-time home buyers who are in the market looking for their first home? What do you give them for advice?
I think, again, transparency and communication, right? There are now other ways to, there's always been other ways to pay commission or compensation, right? I think it's just a honest conversation of there's three ways to do this. And whatever you would like me to do is what I'm going to do for you. If you have money to pay me out of your pocket, then great. If not, we will work with the seller to negotiate that into our offer.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean to the caller before, or the commentator before, it doesn't mean that buyers are going to be out of thousands and thousands of dollars.
Right.
Work with an agent that's seasoned and knows what they're doing when it comes to negotiating and working through a contract, and you will be okay.
And there's a lot of data available out there publicly and through your realtor that you can get comparable pricing in a market that you're looking at. And that's really important too, because you want to pay a fair price, right, Mike?
Yeah, it's and prices right now are increasing, 7-8% a year, and month to month, and it all comes down to inventory. We simply do not have enough inventory. We've been below 6 months is considered the balancing point where buyers and sellers neither has an advantage. For the last going almost 20 years since 2006, new construction really started diving then, and it's been about 50% of what it was prior to the recession ever since. So we're 8,000 units behind where we need to be to have a balanced market. And it doesn't look like that's going to improve anytime soon. So buyers and sellers, it's a seller's market. It's going to be for the foreseeable future, I'd guess the next 2 to 3 years at least. And buyers are going to have to adjust to that.
Mm-hmm. So people always like to understand, is it a buyer's market or is it a seller's market? How would you answer that question?
I think Mike just did.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a seller's market right now until inventory can normalize.
Yeah.
And we're just in this pocket of low inventory, which makes it's a tough market out there for everybody.
Yeah.
So
are you still seeing, and we only have about 20 seconds, but are you still seeing offers above asking, and what's that percentage?
I have been. It's not 2 years ago where it was crazy, but we are still writing over asking, especially if we're in competition. Mm-hmm. But again, seasoned agents know how to write creative offers.
Yeah.
So there's other ways to secure a home with just not the price.
Yeah, the important thing for buyers is to get a lot of, make sure they have their financing in order before they walk into a house.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Happiness and housing. That's what we're talking about today. Do what you love, but, you know, you might not be able to do it right away. This is kind of always part of my career advice for people. Yet, we all define happiness a little bit differently. For me, it's never been about a destination, but rather a journey and a process. So it's been interesting to follow all the coverage around the World Happiness Report and how it relates to money and economics in our own lives. On Sunday, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter Natalie Eilbert had a front page story titled "The U.S. Has Plummeted in Happiness Rankings," raising the question, do we know what real joy is? Natalie joins us on the phone this morning. Natalie, thanks for taking time out of your morning. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Of course. So, I know you didn't necessarily tackle this in the story, but are we happy here in Wisconsin and Milwaukee?
Yeah, so this is really, I'm going to give you an obnoxious answer.
Okay.
you know, as a journalist, I can't say for certain whether Milwaukeeans are happy per se. The World Happiness Report really only tracks the country as a whole through Gallup and other global partners. But I do know that the World Happiness Report uses something called Cantrell's Ladder, which determines social well-being. So Cantrell's Ladder asks people to imagine a ladder, and the topmost rung is where people are thriving the most.
Okay.
The middle rung is where people are, you know, they're struggling a little bit. But then the bottom rung is where people are suffering. And so that bottom rung really, or I guess wherever you are on that rung, it just depends on, you know, things like socioeconomic status, sense mm-hmm. of belonging versus resilience. I know at least for Milwaukee, they, you know, the city ranks second in poverty levels among the U.S.'s most 50 populated cities, mm-hmm. but it also has a strong cultural identity. So, you know, it just depends on the person, but it does really, you know, if you imagine this ladder and think of where you are on it, that can give you kind of a sense of what might yeah. come next.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Complicated answer.
Yeah, no, that's great. Those strong social connections are really powerful. And I think, you know, that's indicated on that ladder for sure. Someone once told me that, and Jeff, you can have money, but don't let money have you. How are happiness and money linked, and what did you see in your reporting for and analyzing the World Happiness Report?
Yeah, so, of course, you know, we know that money can't buy happiness, but it really helps, right? But to a point.
Yeah.
You know, so rather than thinking of happiness goals in terms of money, I'd kind of reframe it a little bit. Do you have your basic needs met, and do you have resources available to you? Do you have access to green space? Do you have a positive view of the future? Unfortunately, money does give us a leg up with all of those things. But if all we do is spend money on ourselves for needless products that we then post to Instagram, that doesn't do a lot for our philosophical growth mm-hmm. or our purpose, our sense of social connections and meaning, especially if we aren't thinking about our larger community. So it can help, but I would say if you're not using your money toward helping other people, that can, you know, that does something, right? You
yeah.
know, there's a lot of studies that show that we can achieve happiness through things like charity and volunteering. So it really is about how we use the money that we have, both for ourselves and for the people around us.
Mm-hmm. One of the items, and we'll discuss this when we come out back from the break, is one of the items that really connected with me in your story was the talk around positivity spirals. Mm-hmm. We hear a lot about going down the rabbit hole and all the negatives with social media and media and what's happening around us. But I want to get your take on what positivity spirals are. Natalie Eilberg from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel joins us. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Natalie Eilberg from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel joins us. Optimizing happiness. So, Natalie, in terms of your reporting, looking at the World Happiness Report, big story, Sunday, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Were there any surprising or kind of counterintuitive findings in the research about happiness?
Yes, tons. One thing that, you know, I think about a lot, I have been thinking about a lot since I did this reporting is we think that financial stability and happiness are inextricably tied. But data from the World Happiness Report don't necessarily support that association. A good example of this comes from the financial crisis of 2007 and 2008. Where in countries where individuals had a high social and institutional trust, the, quote, happiness consequences in those countries were actually smaller. So it's really about, you know, do you trust your institutions? Do you trust the you know, government, the institutions to help lead you to a safer place? And we saw this again play out with COVID-19. Countries where people had confidence in their government, they had lower COVID-19 death tolls. So we can see ways that trust in institutions and trust in what leaders are telling us does correlate more with happiness than, say, having a ton of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it, you know, obviously we're in peak political season right now. And you often hear like, oh, I'm just sitting scrolling my phone and scrolling the headlines and going down this rabbit hole. You had something called the positivity spirals that you saw in your research. What are positivity spirals and how can they, maybe it's a little bit of a happiness hack, right?
It is. So, you know, there's a bunch I can say about this, but there's someone named Dr. Richard Davidson. He's the lead scientist and founder of the Centers for Healthy Minds out of UW-Madison. And he breaks down happiness into four categories: awareness, connection, insight, and purpose. So positivity spirals use all four of those aspects, right? Imagine yourself walking down the street. Maybe you start to notice the leaves color, the leaves, they're different colors because it's autumn, or there's a new growth that is beautiful. And then someone walks by you and you stop to chat with that person for a moment, or you just smile at them and they smile back. These things make us a little gladder to be alive. Mm-hmm. We do need those connections, those social connections. We are social beings. So being able to start paying attention to the world around us, we start to really admire potentially those things. But you mentioned doom scrolling. The more that we doom scroll, the more bad we'll find. The same is true for positivity. The more good we find every day, the better we might feel at the end of the day when we're sort of assessing how our day was.
Yeah. Well, another thing that the World Happiness Report says is that you got to lead with gratitude. So I'm grateful you took the time this morning, Natalie, to talk about your story and just shine a little light on hope and happiness in the greater Milwaukee market. Enjoy the rest of your week. I appreciate your time again.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for having me. I'm happy to be here.
All right. Very good. When we come back, Herb Cole's Ranch is on the market. And let's talk about more good, but doing good with food. This is The Upswing, and we are presented by Horicon Bank. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We are presented by Horicon Bank. So, 8 months after the death of former U.S. Senator Herb Kohl, his 190-acre Red Hills Ranch near Jackson Hole, Wyoming, has been listed for sale for $65 million. This, according to the Milwaukee Business Journal. We'll get more insights on this in next week from Rich Kirchen, the reporter on this story. But it's great to see the legacy of former Senator Herb Kohl continue. The proceeds from the sale will go to his Herb Kohl charities. Proceeds will then go directly to the Herb Kohl Philanthropies and Herb Kohl Educational Foundation. Again, wonderful to see the legacy of Herb Kohl continuing in the market. By the way, he was a big fan of Calderon Club. Used to see him there often, right across from the Hyatt Regency in downtown Milwaukee. And Calderon Club is one of 41 Milwaukee area restaurants and bars that will participate in Do Good with Food. Gino Fazzari, the owner of Calderon Club, joined Wisconsin's Afternoon News and talked to WTMJ's John McCure yesterday. Here's the full story.
August 26, 2013 was an amazing day for Gino and Leanne Fazzari. Their beautiful daughter, Viviana Lucia, came into the world. Life was good. She seemed healthy and happy. The family settled into a routine. 5 days later, Gino kissed Leanne goodbye and headed to his restaurant, the Calderon Club. He got to work and a feeling he had never experienced settled over him.
Something just told me to turn right back around and go home. And I couldn't for the life of me tell you what that was. Got home, walked in the door, and I saw Leanne on the couch with the baby in her arms.
He's looking at Viviana, and he's like, Leanne, she's blue. Just get her in the car seat. Let's go.
Something told me I had to get her to Children's Hospital. And so never occurred to me to call an ambulance. Never occurred to me. It was just get everybody in the car, you know, Suburban, and let's go.
We pull up to Children's. Gino dropped me at the front door, and I walked in with the car seat. And at that time, there was a nurse coming out, and she looked in the car seat, and she just grabbed it and started running with it.
Molly Basil was working in the Children's ER that afternoon.
Took the baby out of the car seat, called a code. And when you call a code in the ER, everything kind of steps to the next level. She looked blue, kind of a grayish color and blue, meaning she wasn't getting any oxygen.
Leanne is a nurse and knew that something was very wrong with her baby girl. Gino parked their truck, ran into the ER, and was stunned at what he saw.
When those doors opened and I saw what was going on, I said, well, that can't be my daughter. There's no way that can be my daughter because that girl is not breathing.
It was almost surreal, like just to have to stand there and watch it and not be able to do anything.
As the children's team worked frantically, Gino and Leanne were allowed to stay in the room. Basil remembers it like it was yesterday.
She's just a little newborn and not breathing on her own. It doesn't get any more serious than that. She's blue. She's not breathing. There's really no worse situation than that.
The seconds felt like hours.
When they were ripping her out of the car seat, putting her on the table, like getting her clothes off, I knew as a nurse what they were doing, and I couldn't believe that it was happening to our baby. They couldn't find an IV. Every bad thing that could happen was happening to her, and I had to watch it.
The Fazzaris were told that things didn't look good.
She also hadn't been baptized yet, so I was worried about that. So the minute he walked in the room, I gave him some water, and I said, you have to baptize her. And the staff were amazing. They stopped what they were doing. I mean, they still were working on her, but they let Gino baptize her.
Gino blessed his daughter, afraid that he might never hold her again, but praying that somehow she would be okay.
I just put my faith in God and said, you know, she was at the best place that she could possibly be at in order to diagnose and treat what was wrong with her.
Viviana didn't breathe for 2 minutes. She was without oxygen for 2 full minutes before being resuscitated.
In a brand new baby, it hits differently. They're just so fragile, and the fact that we were able to stabilize her is nothing short of a miracle.
She was stabilized, but still very much in danger.
The first 2 nights, they would have meetings with us and say, she's probably not going to make it. She's probably not going to make it.
What they had let us know was not to get our hopes up, that she may not make it, and if she does, she may, you know, more than likely have permanent damage.
Little Viviana spent 27 nights in the Children's Neonatal Intensive Care Unit, one of the best in the world. Leanne slept at the hospital all 27 nights. Eventually, Viviana did wake up.
You know, God worked a miracle there, and I've heard that many times from the staff at Children's. But he used children's to work that miracle.
Viviana had chylothorax, a condition where the milk she was drinking was leaking into her chest cavity, slowly suffocating her. She's now made a full recovery.
At Facility, that hospital, Children's, was able to save our daughter's life.
Viviana's a healthy, energetic 10-year-old girl.
She's a beautiful, young, thriving 10-year-old, and she is just perfect in every way.
To thank Children's Wisconsin, the Fazaris regularly brought food and gifts to the staff. As Viviana thrived, they wanted to do more. A few years ago, they launched Do Good with Food with three local restaurants. On Thursday, 40 Milwaukee restaurants will donate part of their profits to Children's Wisconsin.
The work they do is amazing, saves lives every day.
John Merkier, WTMJ News.
Do Good with Food is Thursday. 40 participating restaurants all across the metropolitan Milwaukee area.